is time. The drums of war are beating and a storm gathers. The pieces move on the board, unseen by mortal eyes. Remember what we have taught you. They walk among us, blending into the background. But their gaze betrays them. They are the harbingers of chaos, wearing human skin as disguise. Remember what they have taken from you. The war that has slumbered for eons stirs once more.
My name is Owen Baxter. I woke up on Jacob's couch, holding a lazy arm over my face as the slanted blinds did little to protect my eyes from the penetrating sunlight. The bathroom door adjacent to me was cracked open, and I heard the steady drum of water hitting the shower tiles as Jacob prepared for his day. I could not bring myself to rise just yet. My eyes wandered around Jacob's apartment, eyeing some of the modern art on his walls that I had not seen when I arrived late last night. Among some of the more abstract paintings was an artist's depiction of the DC metro system. The colorful swaths of paint representing each of the metro lines seemed extremely detailed and accurate. My gaze drifted to a framed photo on the end table, Jacob and Megan grinning on some sort of tropical vacation. Their heads were tilted slightly downward, eyes squinting as they tried to deal with the sun the same way I was on the couch. Their matching dark hair shimmered nearly identically in the bright rays, giving them more of a sibling-like appearance than that of romantic partners. It was impossible not to notice the small family that was well visible in the background of the photo. Some of them looked directly into the camera, seeming none too pleased to be a part of the shot. I found myself wondering why they had picked this particular image to display, given that the family occupied such a significant portion of the frame. I tried to recall where Jacob had said this particular vacation was. Bermuda? Hawaii? It had been several years since he'd mentioned it to me. But then again, I was certain no one else had shared stories of their island getaways with me since. This made me think on what else I may have let slip through the cracks of my memory. 3 years was a long time, and my absence on any form of social media meant that I was relying purely on the memory of our previous conversations, and even those I recalled only as brief talks where Jacob called me out of guilt, often asking how my treatments were going. When I made the call to Jacob a couple of days ago, asking for a place to stay for the week, I knew I had caught him off guard. I had explained to him that I needed to get some tests done at the hospital. After assuring him that I was going to be okay, he had asked about my job at the docks. I lacked the courage to admit that I'd had 3 different forms of employment since then. But being in Jacob's place and witnessing the tangible evidence of his success reaffirmed my decision to not mention it. I finally rose from the couch and ventured the small distance from Jacob's living room to his kitchen. The tiny pane above the sink offered a glimpse of DuPont Circle, already alive with commuters rushing to their workplaces. I dragged a chair out from the table, its overly elegant design made it difficult to grasp. As I took a seat, Jacob emerged from his room, wearing his work attire, save for his dress shirt and jacket. He greeted me warmly while slipping into his button-down. "Hey, morning man, you got everything you need for today? You need a ride to the hospital?" I stuttered for a second and looked down, almost forgetting the reason I gave him for needing a place to stay. No, I think I'm just gonna get an Uber. Thank you, though." Jacob studied my face for a moment before grabbing his tie and wrapping it around his collar. "Look, I don't think I'll be back until around 7:30. But we are still on to go out with Megan tonight. She's excited to meet you, but until then, feel free to eat or drink anything that's in there." Jacob gesticulated towards the area of the refrigerator and cabinet. As I started to respond, I felt the need to look back towards the refrigerator as if just learning of its location for the first time. I think I'll probably be out for most of the day too, but I appreciate it." Jacob and I spent a couple of minutes talking about his job as a political advisor, as he quickly crammed a breakfast consisting of a protein bar and banana into his mouth. He told me how last year he had worked on a congressman's campaign, only for the congressman to experience some sort of major health problem in October, right before the election. Jacob seemed almost angry with him for his untimely health complications that left his resume weaker than it otherwise would have. I nodded along agreeably, fully unable to relate to any facet of his work. Jacob had somehow found the situation similar to an old English teacher we had in high school. I listened as Jacob shifted gears, recalling how Mr. Langerstman had promised to pen us glowing recommendations that would guarantee our admission to any university we desired. At the time, we had bold plans of attending George Washington University together, thinking these letters of recommendations would all but erase the B's and C's we had been averaging throughout high school. Ultimately, Mr. Langerstman would fall seriously ill just before application season, causing him to take a leave of absence he would never return from. As Jacob finished recounting the story, an uncomfortable silence settled between us. I sensed there was something more he wanted to say, his eyes searching the floor as if it held a cue. I deflected, making some joke about Mr. Langerstman's weight and how we probably should have saw it coming. Jacob laughed, looking relieved before picking up his bag and making for the door. Jacob offered me a ride once more, which I politely declined. While halfway out the door, he spun around and pointed to the counter, mentioning that he had gotten me a MetroCard, preloaded with some money if I needed it. I looked at the card, feeling a little guilty that he had taken the effort for me, and thanked him once again. Through the pane above the sink, I watched Jacob walk across the street and disappear into a building which doubled as a parking garage. Now alone in the apartment, I made for the fridge, just to inspect what was inside. Before I could open it, I was distracted by some of the pictures and cards held up by magnets on the door. They were mostly wedding invitations and Christmas cards, but there were a few more pictures of him and Megan as well, one of them posing with a senator at some sort of formal dinner, another along the third baseline of a Nationals game. I had never met Megan formally, and Jacob had told me very little of her since they had started dating. But looking at the pictures now, it felt like I already knew her so well. I gathered my worn duffel bag from beside the couch and brought it to the kitchen. Unzipping it, I pulled out a laptop which was on its last legs and set it on the table. The ancient machine exerted audible effort as it started up.
You stand at the precipice of revelation, teetering on the edge of a truth long buried. Tonight we will make contact. I possess your instruction, and those that lurk in the shadows of your consciousness will tremble at your approach. Remember, appearances deceive. Trust not your eyes for anything but judging the eyes of others. The veil between worlds grows thin. Soon it will tear asunder, and you will see with clarity the true nature of your existence. Be vigilant. They walk among us wearing familiar faces, speaking with trusted voices. But you have chosen to see beyond their masks. I wait for you.
The smell of the underground DuPont Circle metro station was recognizable, though still unpleasant. I had become restless in Jacob's apartment after just a few hours. Equipped only with the meager funds I was able to raise from pawning my possessions and the metro pass Jacob had provided, I embarked on a journey to partake in one of the city's few free activities, the zoo. I stared at the intricate web of colored lines crisscrossing the metro map that displayed on a pillar between the tracks. I had to try to decipher it in 20-second intervals before the screen would switch to some ad for shampoo. After mustering some courage, I approached a hurried commuter for directions. The man barely looked up at me as he continued to walk by. His dismissive suggestion to download some app that would tell me what train I needed left me in no better position. I glanced down at my incapable flip phone as one pulled into the tunnel. A family of four caught my eye as they bustled onto the train, their excited chatter and map-clutching hands easily marking them as tourists. The father herded his two children with difficulty through the doors while the mother juggled a bulky backpack, Our final destinations being the same seemed likely. Following their lead, I slipped into the car and found a seat near the small screen on the wall, displaying the upcoming stops. My eyes scanned the list, and I felt a twitch of embarrassment as they landed on Woodley Park Zoo, just a single stop away. The relative emptiness of both the zoo's visitors and animals struck me as strange. I wandered past enclosures with habitats where life stood eerily still. I stopped at exhibit after exhibit to search for any sign of movement, only to be disappointed with a lack of anything at all. Even the gift shops, the ones where I would beg my parents for some sort of overpriced souvenir as a kid, seemed to be closed. After some aimless walking, I found myself on a winding path marked as the African Trail. This direction included more seemingly empty exhibits that did not deliver on their promised exotic beasts. I scrutinized every enclosure, attempting to discern whether the animals were merely concealing themselves or if they had been completely removed. The end of the path put me in front of a vast enclosure with a placard boasting of lions and tigers. Next to me, a small boy stood on his toes, straining to see over the barrier. The enclosure was by far the largest I had seen so far, a vast expanse of simulated nature. Large rocks and trees dotted the landscape, creating a semblance of a natural habitat. In the center, a towering precipice dominated the scene, overlooking an empty moat that encircled the interior, which created an additional barrier between the visitors and the animals. My eyes were drawn to movement at the summit of the rocky outcrop, at least 100 feet above the empty moat below. A tiger, its orange coat vivid against the pale stone, paced back and forth. Its movements looked strange and distressed as it kept retracing its steps of the small area. I tore my gaze from the distressed tiger and noticed a small group gathered to my right. A zookeeper in khaki stood at the center, gesturing towards the enclosure. Curious, I drifted closer to catch his words. "That's Sasha, our Siberian tiger," the zookeeper explained, his voice carrying a note of pride. "She's about 9 years old and weighs around 400 pounds. I edged closer, straining to hear more clearly. "Siberian tigers are the largest of all big cats," he continued. "In the wild, they are the apex predator of every environment that they can be found. But their natural habitat is shrinking rapidly due to human intervention." I felt a jolt as his head turned impossibly fast in my direction. His gaze suddenly locked onto mine, and his words aimed squarely in my direction. "Soon there will be nowhere left to hide." I stumbled back, meeting the man's gaze. His eyes, unnaturally distanced, pierced my composure. My spine pressed against the path's bordering fence as I glanced around at the other visitors, desperate to confirm if they were witnessing the same ungodly sight. But the visitors weren't. Their eyes were riveted on the enclosure, where Sasha paced with increasing agitation now, on the lower level closest to us. My heart raced as I noticed another zookeeper entering the enclosure, carrying what appeared to be the tiger's lunch. Even from a distance, I could see that the zookeeper's eyes were not right. His movements were stiff and unnatural, like a marionette controlled by an unskilled puppeteer. He clutched a bucket of raw meat, swinging it with each stilted step. The tiger's pacing intensified as the zookeeper approached. Her tail lashed back and forth as she kept her head low to the ground. The crowd around me pressed closer to the barrier, eager for a glimpse of the feeding. The zookeeper mechanically reached into his bucket and pulled out a hunk of raw meat. With a jerky motion, he tossed it towards Sasha. The meat landed with a wet thud on the ground, but the beast didn't even glance at it. Her eyes remained fixed on the zookeeper. I would have expected an experienced zookeeper to notice Sasha's unusual behavior, to back away or call for assistance, but he showed no awareness of the mounting tension. He continued to throw chunks of meat at her feet with the same robotic movements, seemingly oblivious to the fact that Sasha wasn't interested in the food at all. The tiger's agitation grew with each passing moment. Her ears flattened against her head, and a low growl rumbled from her throat. The crowd also seemed unconcerned with the obvious danger that the man was in. Suddenly, the zookeeper's head swiveled towards me. His eyes now appeared so far apart that they almost looked like they were on the sides of his head. A chill ran down my spine as he stared at me, his face devoid of expression. He continued to throw meat mechanically, not even looking at the tiger now, his gaze never leaving my direction. The tiger gave her final primal warning, and a sense of dread washed over me as I realized what was about to happen. In a blur of orange and black, Sasha lunged at the zookeeper. He offered no resistance at all, seeming to still be staring at me as the tiger made quick work of one of his arms, easily dismembering him. The zookeeper looked down casually to his arm that now laid on the ground to his side, as if it was a mere inconvenience. I stumbled backward, my foot catching on the small boy from before. I toppled, landing hard on the concrete path. He didn't even look at me, his eyes still fixed on the grisly scene before us. The crowd, to my horror, remained eerily calm, as if this was all part of the show. Parents held up their children for a better view. Some even snapped pictures with their phones. My pulse hammered in my ears as I turned and walked away as fast as I could, weaving through the sea of indifferent faces.
The wolf now stalks in daylight, shedding its sheep's clothing. You have seen the enemy unmasked in its grotesque glory. They grow bolder, no longer content to lurk in shadows. It strides now with a confidence born of countless unseen victories. They grow more audacious with every passing moment, secure in the knowledge that the masses walk blind, shielded by their own belief. But you have chosen to witness. You will receive your instructions tonight.
The muted broadcast of the Nationals game and what was left of the setting sun provided the only illumination in Jacob's living room. I was on the couch, sipping what was now my third beer, finally calming some of my nerves when Jacob emerged from his bedroom. "So how did things go at the hospital today?" he asked. His tone was casual, but laced with genuine concern. "It was fine," I said, shrugging my shoulders and leaning forward while still looking at the television. Just, I had to do the CAT scan stuff today. Won't know much until later in the week." Jacob nodded, seeming to accept my answer. "Didn't you have to do something like that a few years ago, too? Are you still seeing Dr. Magellan?" I grimaced, forgetting that I had told him that. I mumbled something vague about medical procedures changing over time and needing periodic updates, and a confirmation I was still seeing Dr. Magellan. Jacob's eyes lingered on me for a moment, but he couldn't find the words to challenge my answer. He turned back into his room for a moment while I stared blankly at the TV. I watched as the Nationals' starting lineup flashed across the screen, displaying each player's dismal batting average. I looked over to the end table and raised my voice a bit so that Jacob would hear me from his room. "Where is this picture from?" Jacob popped out of his room, claiming to have not heard me. I repeated my question. "Barbados," he said as he returned to his room as I stared at the picture again. Something wasn't right. I remembered the family in the background, some of them looking at the camera. But now they stood unnaturally close, almost toe-to-toe, staring into each other's eyes. Their blank faces were mere inches apart, as if someone was rearranging mannequins in a department store. I blinked hard, taking a sip from my beer and turning my gaze to the TV. The Mets pitcher wound up for a pitch. My eyes darted back to the photo, half expecting it to have changed again. The family remained frozen in their pose, oblivious to Jacob and Megan's beaming faces in the foreground. "Do they ever give you this stuff?" Jacob re-emerged into the living room, hanging from his doorway, holding up a pill bottle as if I could read it from my position on the couch. I looked over, frowning while I squinted at the bottle. "What is that?" Jacob spun the bottle in his hand, reading straight from the label. "Ativan, it kinda helps. I thought they might have had you try it before." I shifted uncomfortably in my seat, completely caught off guard by this line of questioning. I kept my gaze forward on the TV. "No, that stuff is for, like, Anxiety. Why do you have that? Jacob kept his head down toward the bottle as if he was going to find the answer written on the label. Jacob did his best to make his response seem casual. He spoke of a tumultuous period in his life just a few months ago when he began to question himself in both his job and his relationship with Megan. I nodded along to Jacob's words, my eyes darting between him and the TV uncomfortably. He must have sensed this as he trailed off mid-sentence and retreated to his room without another word. Jacob re-emerged from his room for the final time, keys jangling in his hand. You ready to head out and meet Megan? I nodded, setting down my empty beer bottle. Where are we meeting her? There's this nice place called the Lafayette in Logan Circle, Jacob replied, slipping on his jacket. It's not far. We can walk there pretty easily. I stood up, my legs just a bit unsteady. As we headed for the door, I turned my head unnaturally to avoid another glimpse of that vacation photo. The walk to the Lafayette took about 15 minutes, but as we approached, I felt increasingly out of place. The restaurant's exterior exuded an air of sophistication I hadn't anticipated. Stepping inside, I was struck by the opulent decor. Crystal chandeliers hung from high ceilings, casting a warm glow over white tablecloths and polished silverware. The aroma of expensive cuisine and the soft murmur of well-heeled diners was almost overwhelming. The host led us to a plush leather booth, and I slid in, acutely aware of my $20 khakis and casual polo. As we waited for Megan, I fidgeted with the edge of the crisp linen napkin, feeling a bit like an imposter. Jacob sensed my discomfort and chuckled, promptly ordering 3 glasses of wine for us and Megan when she arrived. As Jacob leaned across the table, his attention was caught by someone at the neighboring one. It seemed to be someone he knew from work. I sank deeper into the booth, not even attempting to join his conversation. My palms grew clammy and I wiped them discreetly on my khakis. The prospect of finally meeting Megan left my stomach in knots. I'd been anticipating this moment for weeks, but all of my mental preparation felt like it was sliding down the drain now that it was finally happening. I tried to calm my nerves by counting backward from 100, a method I had learned from one of my therapists when I was a teenager. 99. 98. My eyes drifted to the kitchen door as it swung open. A server came through, holding a tray of tiny shrimp and some other expensive-looking seafood dishes. As the door was swinging closed behind her, I caught a glimpse of a cook that stood in the back of the kitchen, eyes unnaturally far apart, staring directly at me. The door closed. 97. 96. It happened again. And again. Each time, the cook appeared expressionless. I glanced at Jacob, still engrossed in conversation with the neighboring table. Swallowing hard, I shifted in my seat, angling my chair away from the kitchen door. My heart raced as I resumed counting. 95. 94. Just then, Megan approached our table. I recognized her instantly from the photos. She moved with a confident grace, her dark hair framing a face that was both striking and approachable. Jacob stood up, greeting her with a warm hug. "Megan, this is Owen," he said, gesturing towards me. I felt a sudden urge to stand to match their formality. In my haste, my knee caught the edge of the table, causing the glasses to rattle. I winced, heat rising to my face as I awkwardly extended my hand. "It's nice to meet you, Owen," Megan said, her grip firm and professional as she shook my hand. As we settled into our seats, Jacob launched into a nostalgic recounting of our high school days. He painted a rosy picture of our friendship, carefully omitting any of the real events that had altered our course, leading us to this moment. I nodded along, occasionally adding a detail or two, but mostly letting Jacob steer the conversation. Megan sarcastically smiled and rolled her eyes as Jacob described how we would perform distractions in the high school lunch line in order to slip ice cream sandwiches up our sleeves. As the conversation drifted towards Megan's work, she spoke with a mix of passion and cynicism about her role as a corporate lawyer for one of the major firms in the city. She described how her firm had just wrapped up a major case where they were representing an insurance company. The case involved a substance abuse treatment center accused of participating in a practice called body brokering. Megan's voice lowered slightly as she explained the intricacies of this process, where treatment centers would hire these body brokers to find addicts with the most lucrative insurance policies, enticing them to check in to specific facilities. Some brokers, she explained, would go as far as supplying drugs to addicts before admission, ensuring higher levels in their system upon entry. This cruel tactic allowed treatment centers to justify longer stays and higher insurance payouts. She revealed how some brokers would recruit other addicts in a pyramid scheme. These recruits would check into treatment centers, befriend other patients, and then encourage relapse after discharge, perpetuating a cycle of addiction and treatment for profit. Whenever Jacob's attention drifted or he glanced down at his glass, I would make sure to look towards Megan. I studied her expressions, searching for any hidden meanings or subtle cues in her words. As the waiter approached, Megan and Jacob ordered with practiced ease, barely glancing at their menus. Slight panic gripped me as I realized I hadn't even looked at mine. I fumbled with the heavy leather-bound menu, my eyes darting across the unfamiliar French names. In a moment of desperation, I pointed to the first item I saw, hoping it wouldn't be something too exotic or embarrassing. As the waiter gathered our menus and walked away, Jacob excused himself and headed to the bathroom. Suddenly, I found myself alone with Megan at the table. The crystal chandelier above us casted fractured light across the tablecloth as I opened my mouth, desperate to ask about her last message. But the words stuck in my throat, refusing to form. Megan's voice cut through the silence. "Owen, I'm sorry for what you had to go through back in high school." Her words hit me like a physical blow. I blinked, caught off guard by the sudden shift in conversation. My mind raced, trying to process her statement and its implications. Why would she bring this up right now? Why was she still talking like this when Jacob wasn't here? "Jacob told me about what happened," she continued, her voice softening. "He feels terrible for leaving for California when he did. So quickly after it happened and all." I stared at her, my chest tightening. I couldn't mask the confusion on my face. Megan's eyes held a mix of sympathy and curiosity, waiting for me to speak. I leaned forward, my eyes darting around our surroundings. Lowering my voice, I whispered to Megan, "What are my instructions?" Megan's brow creased, confusion clouding her features. She hesitated, then asked, "What?" My heart raced. My fingers nervously tapped an empty plate in front of me. I looked away slightly as I asked, "What am I supposed to do next?" The ambient chatter of the restaurant seemed to fade away, leaving only the sound of my own shallow breathing. Megan's eyes widened slightly, a flicker of concern crossing her face. "Owen, I don't know what you're talking about." I slumped back in my chair, mind reeling. Why was she pretending not to know? Was this part of the test? I studied her face, searching for any sign of recognition. "I saw one," I murmured, leaning in again. "In the kitchen." I tilted my head subtly towards the swinging doors. Megan turned, following my gaze slowly to the kitchen entrance. When she faced me again, her expression was a mixture of confusion and growing unease. "Owen, what exactly did you see?" she asked, her voice careful and measured. I stared at Megan, waiting for her to break character. My eyes darted around the restaurant, suddenly aware of how exposed I was. I leaned in again. "They were at the zoo too, I saw..." I quickly cut myself off when I saw Jacob making his way back to our table. I straightened up abruptly, nearly knocking over my water glass in the process. "So what did I miss?" Jacob asked, sliding back into his seat with a grin. I forced a smile, my hands trembling slightly under the table. "Oh, nothing much. Just talking about work stuff." Megan's gaze shifted between Jacob and me. She opened her mouth as if to speak, then seemed to think better of it. Instead, she took a long sip of her wine, while staring down at the table. For several minutes, I sat in silence, my eyes fixed on the empty appetizer plate in front of me. The conversation between Jacob and Megan faded into a distant hum as I replayed my exchange with Megan over and over in my mind. Why had she feigned ignorance? The clinking of plates jolted me from my thoughts. I looked up, realizing our waiter had arrived with our meals. The waiter set Jacob's plate down with a practiced elegance, then Megan's. I waited for mine, but he hesitated. I glanced up, my gaze catching his. He had the same eyes of the cook. Panic surged through me. I scrambled backwards, my chair scraping loudly against the floor. My legs tangled beneath me as I stumbled to my feet, nearly losing my balance. Everyone in the restaurant looked towards me as Jacob called out my name, but his voice seemed distant and muffled. Megan half rose from her seat, reaching out as if to steady me. I backed away defensively, my heart pounding in my chest. Without a word, I turned and made for the exit, pushing past startled diners and waitstaff. I burst out of the Lafayette, the cool night air hitting my face as I took a sharp left onto H Street. My heart hammered in my chest as I walked briskly, completely unsure of where I was going. I walked quickly for a couple of minutes, my breath coming in short gasps. The darkness of the night made it impossible to see eyes clearly. After a few more blocks, I stopped and fumbled for my phone in my pocket. One new voicemail.
Listen carefully. It was not safe to speak. The walls have ears, and the streets have eyes. It is far worse than we imagined. They're everywhere. Watching. Waiting. You can't trust anyone. Not even those closest to you. Jacob, he is not who you think, but you must return tonight. It is crucial for what comes next. He can still be saved. In the way your parents could not.
A few hours later, I stumbled back into Jacob's apartment, my heart still pounding. Jacob met me at the door. I silently met his eyes before walking past him into the living room. I could tell that he wanted to ask me what happened at the restaurant right then and there. But he didn't. Megan was waiting there and gestured to the couch across from her. Come sit with us, Owen. I sank into the cushions, avoiding their gaze. The room felt smaller. Jacob leaned forward, elbows on his knees. Megan's hand rested on his back. The tick of the wall clock filled the room. I studied Jacob and Megan's faces, unwilling to be the first to speak. I sensed Jacob's expression held a hint of disappointment. Megan, on the other hand, remained unreadable. Her features were composed. Owen, Megan leaned forward, her voice soft but firm. What did you mean earlier, at the restaurant? You asked me about your instructions? I mumbled, turning away from their scrutiny. My gaze drifted to the window behind me, searching the darkened glass. This time, Jacob leaned forward, his voice sharp. Owen, is this about California, when I left after high school? I blinked. Jacob did not even wait for me to respond. Look, I'm sorry, all right, but I couldn't let what happened to your parents dictate my life. I had to move on. Megan's hand reached out, gripping Jacob's arm. Her face grimaced slightly and lips tightened into a thin line as silent plea for him to stop. I listened. My face impassive. The words washed over me, barely registering. California, high school, it all felt so distant, so unimportant. Jacob's expression softened, his voice dropping to a near whisper. Owen, I remember that day like it was yesterday. When I heard about your parents, I cut Jacob off. In your last message, you said he could still be saved. I nodded my head towards Jacob while looking at Megan. Can he? I cut in, my eyes fixed on her face. Megan looked at me bewildered. Owen, what are you talking about? Jacob's head snapped towards Megan, his eyes wide. Wait, you've been messaging Owen? No, I haven't, Megan quickly insisted, defensively shaking her head. I leaned back into the couch, frustration bubbling up inside me. My fingers dug into the fabric of the armrest as I watched them, their faces a mixture of concern and bewilderment. The room felt suffocating, the walls pressing in. I closed my eyes, trying to shut out their stares and the growing unease in the pit of my stomach. Megan seemed flustered. Owen, what kind of messages are you getting? Jacob shifted in his seat impatiently, his eyes fixed on me. He cleared his throat. Owen, how long has it been since you last saw a doctor? This got my attention, but I did my best to look away. Jacob's gaze softened, but his voice remained firm. I know there's no Dr. Maglin at Georgetown, Owen. Jacob's tone shifted again, becoming almost parental in its condescension. Owen, you know what happens when you don't take your medication. We've been through this before. His words caused me to close my eyes and audibly exhale. I responded, "Something is happening. You need to trust me." My voice cracked slightly with desperation seeping through. I searched Megan's face intently, waiting for the mask to slip, for some flicker of recognition that would reveal her true nature beneath the facade of concern. A heavy silence fell over the room. Jacob and Megan exchanged a long look, some unspoken understanding passing between them. I watched as their expressions changed, concern morphing into something else, resignation, perhaps. In that moment, I realized they had already made up their minds. Whatever was happening to me, whatever I was trying to convey, it was beyond what they could handle here in this living room. How could I make them understand the war that was coming, the forces at play? It all seemed impossibly vast, beyond the scope of mere words. I searched for a way to articulate the gravity of the situation, but every attempt fell short in my mind, my gaze fixed on Megan. I ran through the possibilities again and again, trying to reconcile the woman before me with the messages. Only doubt and uncertainty warred within me. A sense of urgency gripped me. I had to try to save them, to make them see before it was too late. The futility of explaining it all crashed over me like a wave. They'd never believe me, not with words alone. I need to show you something, I said, my voice steadier than I felt. We should go for a walk. Jacob and Megan exchanged a nervous look with raised eyebrows. I could see the speculation in their eyes, the silent debate over whether to humor me or not. My heart pounded as I waited for their response. Finally, Megan nodded. All right, Owen. Sure, Jacob added, though his tone was hesitant. Let us grab our jackets and shoes. As they stepped away to prepare, I let out a breath I didn't realize I'd been holding. I turned to gaze out the window at the darkened street, the glass slightly reflecting a ghostly version of myself. I was certain I'd be able to find one of them out there. Once Jacob and Megan saw for themselves, they'd have to believe me. I stood up from the couch, my legs unsteady beneath me. As I turned, my eyes caught the photo on the end table again. Megan and Jacob were posed differently now, their smiles wider, almost forced. Behind them stood the family. Their grins were manic and eyes wild with a fervor that sent chills down my spine. In the older woman's hand glinted a short sword, its blade catching the sunlight. I blinked hard, trying to clear my vision, but the image remained, taunting me with its devious change. I jerked away from the photo as Megan entered the room, her sudden appearance making me flinch. "Where's this picture from?" I asked, demandingly pointing at the unsettling image. Megan glanced at it impassively, but didn't seem to acknowledge my question. Before I could respond, she pulled out two knives from behind her back. She handed one to me. Her eyes locked onto mine.
It is time.